Yep.
Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Mitten Mob Podcast. Jason here, joined by my buddy Alex across the pond in Germany. We're going to jump into what's going on in our project and, of course, a little bit more of what's broadly happening in the crypto world as well. But before we do that, let's jump in and see how Alex is. What's going on, buddy?
What's going on, man? Great to be here again. As you know, I'm obviously obligated to follow the World Cup. And if I don't, then nobody's going to speak to me tomorrow. So I have to have an eye on the game that's happening right now. But aside from that, obviously looking forward to jump into all the crazy things that happened in crypto and NFT land recently. And I know you and I, we've tried to put aside crypto at least a little bit. But right now we've had some things happening on CT that we cannot wait. We need to pay attention to, because we have seen one coin that dropped a couple days ago that currently gets a lot of attention. And I've seen people go crazy again. And that kind of degenerate behavior reminded me of the best NFT times back in 2021. And the coin I'm talking about is called Ansem, created by a guy called BLK Noise on X. He's claiming that he's the biggest crypto influencer alive, probably, or on X. He has like a million followers. That coin was deployed by someone else a couple days ago, and I think it kind of not much happened on the chart for most of the time, for like a week or two, and suddenly the coin pumped out of nowhere all the way up to like 60 million after the first day, 90 million one day after. And you know, usually when these kind of drops happen or these kind of moves happen on chain, people pay close attention, and everyone was like calling meme coin season again. He basically resurrected meme coins, and yeah, that's what's been going on CT recently. How did you pay attention to that? And I don't want to ask you if you invested, because I know you wouldn't, but how did you witness all that?
I just saw videos going out of, you know, other people trying to explain their version of what they think is going to happen with the token. And, you know, I basically looked at one of the videos, and it's interesting because someone can have all the facts and make all the wrong conclusions. You know, this one kid was talking about how the token's value, you know, the total market cap could run into the millions. But the truth is, like, unless the liquidity is there, it doesn't really matter, because if you sell, you know, if Ansem or whoever the largest holders would start selling, then of course the total market cap drops drastically immediately, and then of course the coin goes to basically nothing, right? So again, it's just more of this sort of, let's try to, you know, inject socialism into a capitalist economy and see what happens. I mean, as long as your valuation is dependent upon everybody not selling, you don't have a valuation. You know, and so someone was talking about this in a video, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly right. Like, you can have the highest valuation in the world, but if no one, if there's not enough liquidity to support sales, then it doesn't really matter what the total market cap is, right? It's kind of a fun number to have on paper. But outside of that, you know, it's just there on paper. It doesn't really matter. It's not spendable. And I mean, all I really did was just, and the conclusion of the video was like, well, we don't know what's going to happen with this one, you know. It could be the next big thing. And I'm like, yeah, we do know what's going to happen with this one. The same hype and horseshit cycle we've seen 1,000 times over. You know, like, you'd have a better chance of success bathing in blood and swimming with actual sharks, right? Like, the silliness that people come to when they get emotionally involved in a thing is kind of ridiculous. But again, this person was making all of the right factual statements, you know, total value, total market cap, no liquidity means, you know, no ability to sell, or the token's going to tank. And then the conclusion was, well, you never know. No, the conclusion is, we already know, dude. We've seen this 1,000 times. Like, stop trying to turn something that's worthless into something that's worth something. It just doesn't work that way. So, I mean, that's really the only engagement that I had with it. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole, and I sure as hell wouldn't buy it for myself. So, yeah, that's my impression.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting because you mentioned liquidity, and that's funny, right? Because I can't believe how, you know, so many people are not paying attention to that. And, you know, you see all these fancy screenshots of people holding like millions of that coin, and, you know, they don't, like, that's, of, as you said, right, like, that's beautiful numbers, but we will never be able to actually withdraw money, sell those coins, and, you know, get that money into your bank account. And if you have a high liquidity coin, like, let's just imagine Bitcoin, right, like, thousands of people are buying and selling it every single second. So if you want to buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, your order fills almost instantly, right, like, the price barely moves. You can see that with the big players, like, they sell millions of Bitcoins in a minute, and the price barely moves because there's so much liquidity, because on the same hand, there are so many buyers actually buying those Bitcoins that people sell. And if you have low liquidity, it means very, very few people are trading it. So if you try to buy or sell a large amount, there may not be enough buyers or sellers. So you can, your trade can push the price up or down a lot. So if that Ansem guy, who I think held like 35 million worth of that coin, if he just sold like 500,000, the price would probably go down 50%. And, you know, numbers drop and people would realize, hey, like, he never had that amount of money. And I mean, that's kind of the thing. And I feel like the hype around that coin completely, like, it's based on, you know, what people see on X, like on the screenshots from Phantom and the posts from people who are like, hey, if you invested like $8 in the Ansem coin yesterday, you would have like 600K right now.
Yeah.
And that kind of like attracts people, and people are like, oh, if I had the chance, like if I just paid attention yesterday, if I invested like $100, I could be a millionaire today. And that's not true. That's just not true. But that's like the false expectation people try to sell. And unfortunately, too many people still fall for that, right? Because if you see that kind of thing happen, and you see, you know, that little, you know, machine running, and you see all those screenshots pop up on your timeline, and people are like, hey, look how much money I made, that attracts, you know, people who feel like, hey, I need to make money as well. And then they like buy into that coin, and they kind of become the exit liquidity to those people who have, you know, these big amounts of coins in their wallets, and they pay, and no, they sell, and that's, you know, what causes the pump and dump effect in the end. And that's why all those coins go to zero. And it's crazy, and I know we repeat that all the time, but it's crazy that people keep falling for that. And, you know, that's one of the points why I feel like this is so bad for crypto, because these meme coins show up every now and then we see a huge pump that attracts new people. You know, obviously crypto is not just marketed on X, but also on other socials. People jump in and feel like, hey, I just need to get some Solana and I can be part of that money printing machine. And then they buy Solana, they buy into those coins, they lose money, and they run away from crypto. But like, yeah, what do you think needs to happen in order for that to stop? Like, obviously, we need to forbid meme coins. That's unfortunately not possible. But how can we educate people the right way?
Well, I mean, all you can do is put the information to the test, right? I mean, until people are engaging their logical centers instead of operating from, you know, emotion and FOMO, they're never going to have a good outcome. And you can't force someone to do the right thing, right? Like the old saying in management is like, you can't fix stupid, you know? So if you have an employee that just refuses to do the right thing and refuses to do the most basic of things, like, you can't fix that person, you can't fix stupid. So at the end of the day, if you have someone, you know, basically harming themselves by participating in a market based on emotion, then there's nothing that you or I can do about that. Someone has to want the information. Someone has to want to actually improve. Someone has to want to actually, you know, take a hard look at what they're doing and look at the results, right? And if you could just realize that when you're coming into anything, if you're basing your decisions on emotion only, you know, obviously humans make most of the decisions primed first and foremost by emotion. But if you can just separate yourself for that for a split second and just inject a little bit of logic, you can see the pattern here. And the pattern is, all of this shit is useless and worthless. That's it. All of it, you know. if you're, you know, there's no utility here, there's no nothing here, it's just vibes. You know, it's bro culture vibes, and this is one of the reasons that I can't stand the whole idea of like this bro culture nonsense, because, you know, you get enough like young testosterone morons in the same room, and the next thing you know, they're all thinking the same way, and this is kind of what this stuff is. So, you know, I've never been that person. I've always been an independent thinker. That's one of the things that my parents instilled in me. So I'm immune to it to some degree, just by virtue of the fact of how I was raised. But it's amazing to me how many people are not. And if you see, you know, your friends jumping in and you see big numbers come across the screen, FOMO kicks in and you have, you know, basically the ability to shut off your memory or not do the research on what's happened previous to this, and you dive in, then you deserve every bad outcome you've just earned because you've just based your decision based on nothing. So can I educate people? Yes, of course. Can you? Yes, of course. As long as they're open to being educated. But until they decide they want to look at it from a different perspective, no one can do anything other than just watch them fail. And hopefully the failure will be, you know, a good teacher for them. But, you know, you never know. And that's just the reality of the situation that we're in.
Yeah, many good points. And, you know, I believe that most of that stuff applies to most of the altcoins as well, right? Like we've talked about that so many times that probably like we can actually consider 95% of the altcoins, you know, as meme coins. And there are so many projects pretending to build whatever, and they are like, we have so many things planned, and you know, there are no users, no revenue, and they will ultimately go to zero as well. And mm-hmm. I finally made peace with my losses on altcoins because I finally sold all the crap I had left in my bags, whether it's, I don't know, Polkadot, whether it's VeChain, whether it's what else, even some Polygon, some Atom, sold all that crap that I had in my wallet left, and that I felt like, hey, maybe that has like one last, you know, little pump and I can like cut my losses. But I saw it go down for the last probably 3 years or whatever. A bag that was worth, if we want to talk numbers, I think it was worth like $12,000 at some point, and I sold for like $1,500. So yeah, had to take the loss, had to learn, obviously, and know that I'll you know, never touch those again. I'm at some point it felt like freeing myself, you know, don't want to be affiliated or in any way connected with those projects. And now I can gladly watch them go to zero. And yeah, this is probably something most people should do, right? Like what are you doing with your, do you have some altcoin bags still?
No, dude, I did exactly what you did. I'm like, you know, if I'm up or down, I don't care at this point. I think there's more opportunity cost in holding, you know, some of the garbage than just selling it for higher quality assets. So I moved everything into Bitcoin, Solana, and then a little bit of Ethereum, like way back when. And I haven't looked back, thought twice about it. Don't really care about the losses that I incurred there, because the truth is, like, I'll make it back and then some on the higher quality tokens and investments that I'm making. So, you know, it's one of those things where you just live and learn, right? And I think as the market matures and, you know, the cream continues to rise to the top, you know, more and more people do the same thing. And this is the reason for my thesis back in the day when I was like, well, you know, ultimately there's only going to be, you know, 3, 4, 5 chains that really survive. Ultimately, their databases and use case and adoption will determine which ones survive. And so I've made my bets. And I think I'm, you know, based on the last 18 months, they've pretty much come to fruition. So I don't care about any losses incurred with alts. It doesn't really matter at this point, because the truth is, you know, like I said, the opportunity cost in holding them is much greater than just moving into something else. So I think you did the right thing. I definitely feel like I did the right thing, and I'm not looking back.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the earlier you did that, the better. But I'm, you know, I'm still a little hesitant because the 4-year Bitcoin cycle seems to be, at least for Bitcoin, still intact. And if that pattern continues, the market bottom wouldn't be expected until October, I think. That's what I read. And that's why I'm kind of struggling to, you know, to go all in Bitcoin already, because obviously it's very good prices already, but everything around 50 would be even better. And I don't know why I'm so hesitant, but I feel like there might be still some, you know, way down before we finally return to run to a new high. But I think the way you do it is basically just buy it all the way down, right? Like, that's probably the best, but I'm feeling like I'm too confident that it goes down still.
Yeah, I mean, if that's your thesis, then you should operate from that thesis. I mean, I think historically, you know, a 50% drawdown is customary. I think the average Bitcoin drawdown, mm-hmm. and this doesn't apply to everything, but the average Bitcoin drawdown is about 66%. So we're at roughly 50% right now. So you could say, well, it could go another 10, 15,000 down, depending on market conditions. But honestly, I don't really think this is necessarily tied to the 4-year cycle. I mean, you could make arguments either way. I think the more we've seen larger money come into the space, the more the space trades like traditional stocks. And, you know, I mean, again, like this stuff is well established, like the whole sell in May and go away stuff just points to the fact that the history of the market and then the money movers, you know, coming out of the major financial centers basically took the summer off. You know, they would go for a month here or a month there to do different things. And, you know, the stocks didn't trade that much, so things traded down. Volume was low. So that's kind of what we're seeing here. So we've got big money moving the markets, you know, whether it's a company that trades like MicroStrategy or whether it's a fund that trades at BlackRock, it's still tons of money moving the market. And as long as those guys move the market, you know, the little guy is irrelevant in terms of, you know, what you can or can't buy. You're not going to have any impact at all on price. None whatsoever. So if you think your entry price can be lower, by all means, go for it. What I know from experience is that I'll never know exactly what the bottom is, just like I'll never know exactly what the top is. So my sole goal is to buy it down on multiple occasions, just continue to buy it down, and then watch it come back up and watch those positions go back into the green. And of course, the better buys, you know, have more green, but all of them will ultimately be green, assuming that my thesis on Bitcoin and Solana and some of the others are correct. So I don't worry about that. But yeah, like timing the bottom is kind of like trading. You know, you're betting that you're right. I've never seen anyone get the exact bottom consistently. You might do it accidentally once or twice, just like you might accidentally sell at the top once or twice. But, you know, no one knows when these two things are going to occur. So buying down and selling the peaks, you know, incrementally, I think is just a smart strategy. And if you can avoid the emotion that comes with it, you're going to do well with that strategy, right? And that's the thing. Like, just remember, when the things are good or things are really bad, you still have to control your emotions in both directions, and you have to make disciplined moves rather than emotional ones.
Yeah, that's really true. But one thing that's been on my mind is Michael Saylor, right? Like, some of the posts he's been putting out lately seem very focused on reassuring people that everything is fine at Strategy. And maybe it means nothing, but when someone feels the need to repeatedly emphasize that there are no problems, it kind of catches my attention, kind of gives me Sam Bankman-Fried vibes. And if he actually starts to sell, you know, bigger chunks of Bitcoin, that might be like the bottom. That, like, what, you know, when we see one more move down, that might be it. Because I'm not sure if he manages to, you know, actually keep every promise he made.
There's a great video that everyone should go watch. Jesus, I should have it handy. I didn't think to bring it up, but there's a guy.
I need it now.
Yeah, I know. He basically analyzed Strategy. And of course, Strategy's mm-hmm. been under fire, of course. But basically, he analyzed the company and he did the math, right? And his conclusion is that Strategy is unbreakable. Like, that's literally his words. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't understand Strategy. Strategy is unbreakable. And while I don't necessarily think any company is unbreakable based on history, you know, there are very few companies that last at all, and very few major companies that last more than a lifetime. So, I mean, I don't buy the noise that strategy is unbreakable, but in terms of math, strategy is fine. So at the end of the day, you know, I think what Saylor's doing, and again, this just could be my bias toward Bitcoin, but I think what Saylor is having to do, based on the fact that so many people are coming out negatively about what they've done, is he basically has to defend his position, because obviously he has investors, buyers, funds that he's influencing when he speaks on the news, right? When the financial news calls him and says, we want an interview, he basically has to tell them and remind them of his financial position from a mathematical standpoint. So I don't necessarily see Saylor as doing a hype job on what strategy has done. He is, you know, I think he's softened some positions based on like some of the feedback that he's gotten, you know, in terms of like, I'll never sell Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. But when you look at what strategy has done from a net purchases versus, you know, like sales versus credit instrument versus dividend obligations versus preferred stock issued. I mean, I'm listing off a lot of different things here. The company has positioned itself to protect itself from drawdowns in Bitcoin for extended periods of time, and also from dividend issuance, right? So like they've got this product where they pay 11.5% interest or whatever it is. I think it's called Stretch. And, you know, they're using preferred stocks. And so like in the prospectus or the verbiage around the stock issuances that they have, they protect the company by saying we can suspend payments if we need to, right? So a lot of people are not understanding how, you know, like the different levels of stock versus preferreds versus credit instruments actually play into their total strategy. And the fact that they've got such a Bitcoin hoard stacked up and they've got so much cash stacked up, they have a ton of options. So, I mean, a lot of things would have to go wrong. Like a lot of things would really have to go wrong for strategy to falter in this moment. Because again, they've got years and years of potential wealth stored up that they could spend to get themselves out of a bad spot. So, you know, as long as Saylor and the company manage their cash hoard and their Bitcoin hoard properly, suspend dividends if necessary, communicate what they're doing to their people, they're going to be just fine. And this is why the guy, I gotta look this video up. This is why everyone should watch this, because mathematically, like literally unless, you know, a dinosaur killing asteroid hits Australia again or something, you know, strategy is going to be just fine. So, I mean, I don't worry too much about what Saylor does or says. Just look at the math. And that's his, I think that's his plea to people as well when he goes on the news, you know, look at the math. But, you know, again, the average person doesn't understand the difference between like a regular piece of stock versus a preferred versus a credit instrument, you know, versus Bitcoin being taxed as property versus cash. Like they're not looking at all those different things on the balance sheet and or how they could or could not be liquidated and or how his debt is structured, meaning that he has no recourse debt. So like he can't be called on any of the debt that's owed. So, you know, again, just you got to understand the math.
Yeah, please, like, please post the reference maybe in the Discord for people listening to this. And I mean, on the flip side, yeah, they're on the flip side, there are also people writing long posts on X trying to prove that it's inevitably going to collapse, right? Mm-hmm. So I definitely need a reliable source. So I'm looking forward to see that video. But yeah, let's move on to better things and let's chat a little bit about NFTs. There was one thing going on this week, which was really beautiful to see, a member of the NFT community. I think you have bought art from her already before all that happened. Dianella Art, hope I'm pronouncing it right. She shared that her family was affected by the recent earthquake in Venezuela and she reached out for help. And it was really inspiring to see collectors and artists and, you know, the wider Web3 community come together so quickly to support her and others impacted. I think she shared videos of the situation and, you know, of the stuff she bought for people, water and food And yeah, it's great, man. It's great to see the community get together when it really matters. And one thing I wondered, like, did the United States cover the news about Venezuela? Like, because I haven't seen anything on the news besides, you know, the stuff I've seen on X.
I don't watch the news, so I couldn't tell you. We don't do cable TV in my house. It's just garbage, mm-hmm. and very little of it do I watch on the internet. So I try to read as much as possible, and you know, there are a few people who I feel like are smart individuals that I follow, but other than that, the news is basically worthless. In terms of what I saw, even on X, I didn't see a lot of news posted about the Venezuelan earthquake. So, you know, what I did see came from Dai, and I reposted what she was sharing. You know, lots of decimated villages and buildings. People's, I think something like 70,000, 60 or 70,000 people are still missing. I mean, obviously in these situations, services go down, water becomes an issue, food becomes an issue, shelter becomes an issue. And apparently, you know, where she is, she's in a position to actually help other people. Her family was safe. I don't know if they were personally impacted by the tremors and or lost personal property, but regardless, they have their health and they're able to get into the world and start helping people and look for people and providing services. So she's been doing as much as she can to help. She's communicated a little bit of that to me. And of course I asked, you know, anyone in the community is interested in purchasing art, like this is a good reason to do it, because obviously she's out there doing boots on the ground type work. And of course, Venezuela being the Marxist hellhole that it is, they could probably use as much help as they can get. So, you know, at the end of the day, the beautiful thing about crypto was illustrated here in that, you know, she could trade a piece of art for some tokens, and those tokens are immediately available to her. Imagine trying to wire funds to Dianella in Venezuela from the U.S., like, you know, or somehow send her, you know, a money order. Like, it just, I mean, with services down, with lines being interrupted, I mean, it'd be next to impossible. And if it was possible, it's going to take 5 days, 7 days, you know, once all the approvals transpire and all the rest of it. Or, you know, you could just send her some tokens and, you know, the tokens are there in seconds and she can trade those tokens to whatever her local currency is and, you know, or trade tokens with other people. So, I mean, like the beauty of that, you know, I think can't be ignored, and the simplicity of that can't be ignored. So anyone with a phone, you know, connected to any, you know, cell tower in the nation she could work with, connected to any internet service provider in the nation she could work with. And this is one of those things that just like illustrates the beauty of the technology. And so I can't think of a greater use in times of tragedy than being able to send someone some funds so that they can help other people out, help their families out, make sure everyone's taken care of. And yeah, I love it. And the fact that she's an artist and had pieces for sale just made it that much easier, because it's like, hey guys, you like great art. Like, you know, you've seen some of the pieces I've picked up from Dai, go check her stuff out. And if it resonates with you, then, you know, pick up a piece. Like, you don't even have to donate. You can literally just buy something from her. Right. And you get a beautiful piece of art. She gets the tokens that she can use in that marketplace to help herself or other people. So, you know, it's just an absolutely beautiful technology. And this is the reason that it will continue to be adopted.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, if I wanted to help her without, you know, having any crypto or something, and I reached out to her and asked about her, I don't know, bank and account information or whatever, and I transferred, like, I don't know, $300 to her, I'd probably get a phone call from my bank immediately, and they'd ask, like, why do you send money to Venezuela? Like, who are you supporting? Like, why do you finance terrorism? Or something like that, right?
Sure.
And it's crazy. Like, if with crypto, I can just press a button, she gets the funds, she can exchange them for US dollars or whatever, and she can help within, you know, like a second or a couple seconds. And that's so, so good. And yeah, if you guys want to help her, her handle is Dianella, D-Y-A, Nella Arts. And she got some beautiful art up for sale. Definitely check that out. It's really, really good. I love the art. I discovered her through this. So definitely getting some more art from her. And yeah, it's like human psychology, right? Like in a week or something, most people will probably have forgotten about that. And these people have to struggle with it for years, probably, like if you look at those buildings, but it's terrible. And I hope they're going to be good. I mean, you know, especially when that happens to people from a country, you know, they have been struggling before, right? And then now they have that earthquake and everything got a lot worse. It's terrible to see, man. It definitely touches my heart.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, sort of misinformation in the marketplace around crypto and NFTs and all the rest of it. But this one example is just a perfect, like literally you couldn't design a better illustration of like a marketplace where like you sell anything, like anything digital, for example, like in this case, it happened to be art, but it could be other things. There's no greater example of illustrating how quickly you can impact someone's life when your funds are not held in custody by a third party or a government or interrupted by a third party or a government. You just two people, you know, somewhere on the globe choose to freely act and exchange value, then they can do that directly without some sort of intermediary, you know, basically gumming up the works. And so this, again, like this is the reason that crypto has a future primarily. And this is the reason it's not going to go away anytime soon, because as much as, you know, governments and, you know, like big banks like to talk tough about regulation and, you know, like money laundering, they don't give a shit about any of that stuff. And the truth is, at the end of the day, they will use this technology themselves because it's just as easy for them to transact as it would be for us. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, have to realize people are selfish and you want to appeal to their selfish nature by providing value to them. This is how you serve them. And the crypto market provides value by serving people in this manner, for example, quick exchange. You know, both parties are able to freely choose in, both parties are able to freely transact, and both parties get what they wanted out of the transaction as quickly as humanly possible. So, you know, adoption will continue. The major tokens will continue to grow. And as long as that's happening, you know, I don't give a rat's left testicle about what's happening with the broader marketplace. It doesn't matter because adoption will dictate greater price action in the future. And that's all that, you know, as a long-term investor, I'm concerned with.
I couldn't have summarized it better. So as we mentioned, check out what she does, what Dantianella does, help her and send some funds over. It really takes only seconds and it's a good deed. Let's jump a little bit into the Goodfellas as well, as we have something coming up this week as well. On July 3, we got the next artist incubator chapter being written, and Lilia is dropping her piece, Guardian of the Sun, a really, really cool piece. I just received the work in progress video today, and I'm a huge fan of those videos because I love, you know, seeing those pieces come to life. And I'm kind of getting tired of telling you guys that this piece is like unlike anything we have in the gallery, but it is. And once you see it, you'll understand. So make sure to check it out. And on top of that, there might be a surprise coming up as well, because we got Independence Day in the United States. And for those of you guys who are not aware, we are celebrating how many years? 250 years, United States. Is that correct? Is it even more special because it's 250 years and not like 248?
Yeah, of course. you know, I mean, it's got a big, long, funny name, right? You could say, what is it? Semi-quincentennial anniversary, which means like half of 500. Semi-quincentennial, I think, is the way that you would say that. But yeah, of course, like anytime you have a round number, like marketing machine goes crazy. 250 years sounds, you know, way more of a round number than 249. So, you know, it's a big deal here in the States, of course, and people are embracing it, of course, with the World Cup being here and, you know, so much going on around competition, Europeans coming here, seeing how Americans live and the lifestyle here and loving it and posting tons and tons of video content online about how much, which is kind of funny to us, like they go into a Walmart and it's like, oh, this is amazing. And it's like, yeah, it's Walmart. But the truth is, like, if you've been abroad, you realize those things don't exist in other parts of the world, and we take it for granted here. So I think, you know, having the Europeans come here and shed light on how great this place is and how beautiful the scenery is and how incredibly lucky we should feel for having, you know, safe areas outside of most of these ridiculous mm-hmm. blue cities, you know, safe areas, beautiful areas, plenty of room to move around. I think more Americans, at least in my circle, have taken note of the fact that we should show more gratitude for what we have. And this has been a real gift, I think, that a lot of Europeans have brought. And so, yeah, it's been interesting. And I think that's sort of added to the hype around the 250 and, you know, all the rest of it. Plus, 4th of July is always a big holiday, a big summer holiday anyway. So all of those things working together just makes for a much grander idea of celebration in the mind of the U.S. Citizen, I think.
How are you going to spend that day? Like, is it like, are you going to get some food, or like, what do Americans do usually during that day?
July 4th is, for a lot of people, it's like a lake day. A lot of people get out on the boat, you know, go spend time around water. But yeah, it's like lake day. It's like barbecue day, or, you know, for us, what we always do, our tradition is we make homemade hamburgers. So we do like hamburgers and we grill out and we just spend some time together. And this year, I think probably what we're going to do is pack up one of the Jeeps and head off onto one of Arizona's many beautiful scenic trails, and probably do, you know, half day, full day out on the trail in the Jeep, you know, just enjoying the canyons and the pines and getting some different viewpoints in, maybe heading out towards some water, spending some time around, you know, sunset, watching the sunset across a lake or something like that. So that's kind of our plan this year. But yeah, it's barbecues, it's spending time with people, it's red, white, and blue. All the marketing is, you know, like, you know, like Monster, for example, puts out a red, white, and blue art piece on their cans. Ice cream companies will put red, white, and blue out on their popsicles. They'll have red, white, and blue popsicles. They'll see red, white, and blue everywhere, flags, you know, just people enjoying the freedoms that we so often take for granted here.
Yeah, awesome, man. Sounds like a pretty cool day ahead. Definitely making me a little jealous again while I have to spend time in dirty old Germany, you know. Even though, well, not old, right? Germany is not as old as 250 years. Like, when did World War II end? 1945 or something?
Yeah, so 45, yeah.
We are younger. We are definitely younger. We are only 80 years old or so. Like, close to 80 years. So nothing to celebrate yet. But yeah, hope you'll have a fantastic day, and hope you'll share some of the about the trip and the food. I'll definitely want to see a burger that you made. Share something on X. Looking forward to that. And yeah, I will of course continue to watch the World Cup. I got a Germany game coming up in like 1 hour. And yeah, man, you and I, we've already discussed what's going to happen. If I mean, you prefer to see like a USA England final. I'd love to see USA play against Germany, and we have like a little live stream and watch together and drink a Monster.
Yeah, we can do that for sure. Actually. Yeah, that sounds fantastic. I'm down. You can go ahead and put me down for that. I'll definitely do that with you.
Yeah, it's funny because like here in Germany, you have different types of like the way you receive like television, right? Like some people have cable, some have like satellite, some use internet stream, and that means like everyone, like the images broadcasted are not like at the same time. So one guy may celebrate while your neighbor hasn't even seen the goal, and that sucks. And I think if we did a live stream, you'd probably see the goal like 2 minutes before I do. So that would be funny, definitely.
That would be funny, yeah. No doubt. But yeah, for sure. We can work that out. That would be fun, for sure.
All right, fellas. We are looking forward to Friday, of course. Unfortunately, Lilia will not be there. She is not able to speak or understand English. She usually uses a translator. But yeah, she will be around in Discord, definitely. So if you have any questions, reach out to her. I'll try to get some more information about the piece, of course. She provided a really cool description as well. Check that out. Then there is our little surprise drop coming up. And that being said, I hope you guys will have a fantastic... I wanted to say weekend, but it's not weekend. The week just started. So I hope you guys have a fantastic week. I'll drop the Spaces link today or maybe tomorrow. And definitely make sure to bookmark that. We will pick up the conversation we had last Friday. And yeah, Jason, any final words to the audience?
No, I don't think so. Definitely have a great week, guys. Look forward to this week's drop with Lilia. You're going to love it. We get a little, like Alex was saying, we have a bonus coming for you guys as well. But yeah, in celebration of the 4th, and Lilia's piece, I think, is different for a lot of reasons, but I think it sort of has this tribal vibe to it. I think a lot of times people forget, you know, in the modern era, especially in Western culture, and pretty much anywhere where you've got mostly white people, you forget that all of these white people were once tribal peoples as well. You know, the European tribes, the Russian tribes, like everyone came from a different tribe of people. They were indigenous peoples. And her piece, when I look at it, I get like a tribal vibe, like an ancient tribal vibe. And I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe that would be a good question to ask her in her interview questionnaire. But like, it's really, really cool that she picks up on that kind of thing. So I think you guys are going to dig it. It's definitely different from some of the stuff we've had in there. But I think it really portrays a really just a beautiful vibe and visual from that era. So hopefully you love it. And yeah, with that said, we'll have a fantastic week. And there's a lot more coming down the line. Of course, if you're paying attention to my timeline across the weekend, you'll notice that tons of updates went out for blocks. I actually included an easier function for you guys to bring in foreign IP. So you can actually just, like, if you have a link to a NFT on OpenSea, for example, or a link to an NFT on Magic Eden, you can literally just paste the link into the image URL field and it'll decide, oh, is this an OpenSea NFT? Is this a Magic Eden NFT? And it'll grab the NFT and then pull the image in for you. You don't have to go and get the image link from, you know, from the NFT itself. It'll do it all for you automatically, which is really kind of cool. So check that out on my timeline if you missed it. And yeah, look forward to seeing some more blocks go across my timeline with you guys, filling them with things you enjoy and love.
Absolutely, everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you guys on Friday. Bye. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.